Hey man, good. Nice to meet you in person almost. Very, very cool. You're here in our Relay Bitcoin Session podcast. And I would say first thing, cheers.
Cheers, nice to be here.
Cheers,
Thanks for
man.
inviting me.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. You're taking the time. I think I know you're very busy. So maybe could you quickly tell us what is your main thing, or what are your main projects? I think they all circle around Bitcoin, kind of. And what's this Citadel 21 post behind you telling us about you?
Yeah, they will do a circular around Bitcoin 100% very soon, but I've quit my day job. I was working as a crew manager for an offshore shipping company here in Sweden. And
Congratulations.
yeah,
For
so
quitting, not for working for them. Quitting.
anyway, it was a good job for a fiat job. So I've no bad feelings against them or anything like that. I really
Good.
enjoyed it there. But this opportunity to since I got myself sort of a front row seat in the Bitcoin scene, I'm you have to, what's the expression? You have to forge while the iron is hot.
Ah, yeah. You gotta seize the opportunity, right?
Yeah,
When it's there, yeah.
and I'm growing as everyone in Bitcoin. I'm growing more and more passionate about it by the second. So I quit this job. I'm doing one more week after this. And
Cool.
then I'm flying to Mexico for Ugly Old Goat's Bitcoin Standard Conference with Tone Vase and Jimmy Song and Giacomo Succo and some others.
Nice. Chakamazuka is actually an investor in Relay.
He is?
Yeah.
He's half Swiss.
He is. He spends a lot of time in the Italian part of Switzerland, in Ticino. Yeah. Yeah, well, we've met here exactly where I sit. He was here a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I just listened to a pod with him and Jimmy talking about physics and the state of physics, and like they got into quantum mechanics and the many worlds theory and everything. And I'm sitting there so eager to talk to these guys live for a couple of days in Mexico about this stuff because
It's crazy. It gets very deep. I'm way too dumb though to understand any of this. We had a podcast interview to just what you do now with him, and I was really like it's mind blowing. So what I understood was mind blowing, but this was maybe 10%. So he's such an intelligent guy.
He is. He's one of the more clever people I know.
Yeah,
So,
for sure.
and I hopefully I get to know him a little better after
Yeah,
Mexico.
say hi
So,
for me.
yeah, well, sure. So after Mexico, I go home for one night and then I start driving down to Spain. So I'm moving down to Spain with my family where we have a
Oh,
second house,
nice.
and we'll rent out this place for a year and try to live down there for a year and see what happens.
Sweet.
Get the kids into a more international environment and getting out of Sweden. I mean, we've had it quite, how should I put this? Our government has been quite easy on us when it comes to lockdowns and such. We didn't really have any lockdowns, but apart from that, it's a very socialistic society, and there's a lot of problems. And I feel like, especially for the kids, giving them a bit more of an international perspective would be very good.
I've heard for sure.
And to change the environment for me, because I've been working from home for a year or so. And so I'm a bit I'm gonna need a change of environment to in order to like change totally, because I'll need to focus on Bitcoin 100%
Yeah,
from now
cool.
on.
And how will you earn your bitcoins?
That's the tricky part, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
But the books are selling better and better each month, and like I'm writing a third one. I'm finally writing the Everything Divided by 21 Million book.
Nice. So
And
first the video, right? And then the article, and then the book.
No, the article came before the video, actually. So the article, Guy Swan found the article and read it on his pod, and then I got in touch with Yoni Appelberg and we made the video, and after that it sort of took off. So
was that the thing that went viral and actually got you this opportunity now for go all in?
No, not really. I've been wanting to do this for quite some time, and the original plan was to do it next year. So then I negotiated my salary with my with the owner of the company I work for currently, and she didn't want to pay me what I wanted, so so I decided to, okay, fair enough, I'll leave then. But it's all on, there's no hard feelings or anything like that. It's just that yeah, everything has its price, and this a managerial job tends to take a lot of your time, so you don't really have time to do the other stuff you want to do, mainly writing, and for me, and spend time with my family. So so we're taking this year off and we'll see where it leads, and taking things a bit more seriously. I mean, there's so many things that you feel that you ought to do in Bitcoin, like especially technical stuff. You always have sort of a bad conscience that you don't dive deeper into certain aspects of it. I think everyone has that. Yeah, because there's always something new to learn. I mean, until you know the actual code from top to bottom and everything around it, you don't really know what you're doing. So there's always something new to learn. So that'll be one thing. And I mean, I've got to know so many great people the last year, and so many like people I never thought I'd get a chance to connect with ever. like they're way out of my league, really. like Michael Saylor and Jeff Booth and these guys, I never thought I'd interact with those. But
that's so cool. But how did you interact with them? Just on Twitter, or did you meet them on a conference? Or
I went on two pods with Jeff, and I had a conversation with Michael, and then he retweeted my quote and everything. So, and he put my book up on the hope.com, like MicroStrategy's Bitcoin site.
Yeah. Oh shit! There's a lot of traffic there. So there must have been a spike in the sales.
I could notice it, but I wouldn't call it a spike, but but then not only these big shots, but everyone else, like there's so many people that are willing to collaborate. Guy Swan and Yoni Appelberg, naturally, the guy that reads my article and the guy that animates them for me. I mean, so lucky to have met those two, and these publishing houses like Apricot Media in Germany, and especially Consensus Network in Finland or Estonia, wherever they're based, international now, they're making translations of everything. And like, you have all of these connections, yeah, for instance, when I'm driving down to Spain, I'll get the opportunity to visit a couple of Bitcoiners on the way down. So there's a lot coming up the next few months. There's online conference.
Yeah, there's a lot to do. Have you been into writing articles writing? Because you're now basically, your role, as I see it, is a writer and educator in Bitcoin. Or even a researcher as well. So, but was writing and educating a big part of your life before Bitcoin, or was like Bitcoin taking this talent out of you?
I wrote music before.
Okay.
So I just compiled a playlist of my old songs. Apparently, they're all on YouTube. I didn't really know that, but I released a couple of albums through Spotify with various bands and under my own name also. So put together a little playlist of my music if anyone is interested in that. But after I quit my last band, I had to use my creativity for something else, because I always felt an urge to do something creative, and writing came naturally after taking a course in 2016 about digital currencies and blockchain technology and all these buzzwords. I started writing about
in 2016. There must have been like only a handful of courses for that, no?
Not altcoins have been or shitcoins have been around around for quite a long time, actually.
Maybe not that many before 2017. I mean, sure, there were these, you know, I don't even remember.
There was Peercoin and Vertcoin and what a Namecoin and whatever they were called. But they will all suffer the same fate.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. Ripple is actually a dinosaur of altcoins. I think they've been around.
Litecoin was the first one, I believe.
Litecoin, yeah. Litecoin is an old one, but Ripple, I think they start. When did this start? I think 2014 or something. They're quite old.
Yeah, they're quite old. One could even call them dinosaurs.
Altcoin dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Who knows why they're still around? Probably because they just made so much money on their
token. There are, shares. There's no shortage of gullible people in the world. Yeah. That's for sure.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But anyway, I started writing articles, and then one of them became sort of viral, and that happened to me once before with a music video that got around 100,000 YouTube views when it was featured on the Pirate Bay. So for a couple of days, so I knew how it felt to go viral when you press F5 several times a second just to update the thing and see the new comments. But that happened to one of the articles around the time of the Bitcoin Cash fork in 2017. Mm-hmm. I wrote an article about how to get a hold of your private keys, So after like a year of writing articles, I thought maybe I should turn these into a book. Mm-hmm. After Andreas Antonopoulos had turned his talks into a book, I thought I could do the same thing with my articles, just as a like to see how the process works, and and I did. But then the only book I had associated with my name was that mediocre pile of articles. so I thought I might I need to write a proper book. Mm-hmm. So I did that in 2019. I promised myself to write a page a day for a year, and I wrote for about 106 days, and then I got bored with it. So I thought this thing is finished now. I don't really have that much to add.
How did you go about this? Because, you know, what was the process? You were like, okay, let's write a book. Like, how did you find the topic? Did you try to choose something that was still missing, or that you felt like needs to be highlighted more in the Bitcoin space? Or did you try to talk to a specific like a group of people to teach them something? Or?
Not really. I wanted to be more coherent than the articles were. So I wanted to have a certain flow in the book, with like going through the basics, like that you can view everything you do and everything every person ever does deliberately as a trade. Either you trade with yourself or you trade with someone else, but everything can be viewed as a trade, and then go on from there. And then the
very philosophical start that then ends in how valuable Bitcoin is or will be.
Yeah, I thought like in the back of my mind, there was this missing piece that like people were missing a very essential piece of what Bitcoin is, and that is, if it works, there's no end point to hyper Bitcoinization. And I've been pushing that narrative more and more. Like there's literally no end point to how valuable this thing could be, because the demand for it could always increase. And we made a quite recent video about how the price of Bitcoin will follow a J-shaped curve rather than an S-shaped one. While adoption might be S-shaped in terms of users, there will always be more demand and always fewer and fewer sats. So there's really no end point to hyper-Bitcoinization, but it's a continuous process.
Wow, that's mind-blowing. So you would disagree basically with the stock-to-flow model that says it's an S-curve and there will be some true value for Bitcoin at one
point. Yeah, I don't believe that at all. Like the thought of experiment is like, even if you get all the people in the world on Bitcoin, they will still, to begin with, they'll still use fiat currency and they just have a Bitcoin wallet and like use it for this and that, but it will not be their main currency. But as time goes along and they figure out that this is much easier and much better to have, especially with the Lightning Network, they will start converting more and more of everything they own into Bitcoin, and there will be a huge demand for Bitcoin. This is where hyper Bitcoinization happens, and it becomes pointless other types of money become pointless sooner or later. But even after that, the purchasing power of Bitcoin will still go up because what you have after hyper Bitcoinization is a global free money, a global free market with sound money, where interventionism from states and so on is much, much harder to implement. So there are voluntary transactions rule the world, and coercion is much harder to implement, which means that you have a much, much better planet, a much, much better civilization where everything is easier, and everything, the free market, an economy is not a zero-sum game. It grows. So like all the new assets and all the new investments that come in, they add to the total value.
Yeah, because there's always progress. There's always innovation. Right?
Yeah, so basically that's where the idea comes from. Everything there is and everything that ever will be divided by 21 million. That's the true value of Bitcoin. It never stops because things can always get better. So the purchasing power goes up always. And add to this that people will lose their Bitcoin.
Exactly, that's what I want to bring. Because 21 million is not actually true. Theoretically, it's true, but practically, it's way less. It's probably around 15, 16 million at this point.
And yeah, at best.
And people will always lose Bitcoin. It will even be scarcer and scarcer and scarcer while sucking in the whole value that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, right?
So especially if you have 8 billion people on Bitcoin. That's 8 billion potential boating accidents every second. Like, I'm totally serious. The people will lose their sats. And the total, the scarcity of Bitcoin is increasing all the time, or the abundance is decreasing, or however you put that. The amount of tradable bitcoins is more and more finite the more time that passes. And this is I think this is so this mechanism is so underrated.
Probably also because it's so far away like from a time perspective, because we know, you know, until 8 billion people actually own and use Bitcoin, and until they use it solely, exclusively, and no other fiat currency are being used. I mean, that we were talking about, I mean, I don't know, European, but I think we're talking about decades here, if not even maybe even a century or something. So it's from a time perspective, it's far away, and it's also quite abstract, you know, from a thinking point, it is far away.
But I love thinking things through and following the thought vector wherever it leads me. And this is one of the we might be talking centuries. It might take a long time, but then again, who would have thought 5 years ago that Bitcoin would become legal tender in El Salvador? And there are articles from 5 years ago where where Bitcoin was around $400 and now it's $40,000. I mean, those predictions were laughed at back then, but still they came through. They came true, and I mean, there's nothing really saying that the price that it would slow down, because the money printers of every other currency are going brr at an ever faster rate, at an ever increasing rate all the time, while the halving keeps on happening every 4 years. So
it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and I think like this is the I don't remember who said this, but Alan Albert Bartlett, I think his name is, the greatest shortcoming of the human race is our inability to understand the exponential function. And this is what's happening in Bitcoin. It's too weird and too good to be true for the human mind to comprehend. I mean,
it's like the example: if you fold a paper 50 times, how high will it be? Right?
Yeah. And it's like when you're around 150 times, you can reach the sun or something. Yeah, exactly. Something weird like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or the rice. The pieces of rice on a chessboard doubling, and like when you're mid second row, you can't really. Yeah, it becomes weird. Exponentials are weird, but if you do understand exponential, or if you at least try to, you can't really come to any other conclusion about where Bitcoin's price is heading. Like, if it works, it will be weird. It's like, so I think we're vastly underestimating the power of this thing.
So let's assume that's true, and it's going to happen in the next one or two decades, or at least in our lifetime.
Yeah.
How do you think this is going to take place? Like,
well, that's
there must be. All the fiat currencies basically break, and then won't there be a huge storm into Bitcoin, like kind of a war around Bitcoin, even? Or
yeah, that's
like, there are massive scenarios to be, you could think about that.
Yeah, that's the million sat question. Well, first of all, the thing is, the crash is coming anyway. So, and we have Bitcoin as a life raft, because all fiat currencies are doomed in the long run. Because an ever-growing GDP is not a sustainable thing. It just can't happen forever and ever, says the guy who said just said that Bitcoin's price can go up forever. Anyway, so take it that that's unsustainable. So there's a crash coming. Bitcoin functions as a life raft, so we have something to save us from that. But the thing is, it mitigates violence, and it makes violence a lot less effective, because if you kill a Bitcoiner, you can't just steal his Bitcoin, because the information about the Bitcoin is in his head, and you can store all your wealth in your head, and the more valuable Bitcoin becomes. If you just sit and hodl your Bitcoins, the part of what you own that is Bitcoin rather than stuff becomes larger and larger all the time. Like trying to coerce people and trying to take things that they own by force is getting less and less effective over time. So in that sense, Bitcoin sort of destroys the old models where we have territories and governments taking taxes and inflating the money supply, and like even like mobs and mafia type organization and organized crime. It will be a lot harder in the future, where like the easiest way to get to someone's Bitcoins is to actually provide them with something of value. Because right now it's easier to take someone's stuff in a lot of scenarios than to provide them with something of value. With Bitcoin, that's not true, because with Bitcoin, the information about the asset is the asset. Mm-hmm. So what you need from the other person is the information, which is the asset. So knowledge becomes literally valuable rather than just metaphorically valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a mind-bending concept too, when you can like move whatever amount of money you want across borders. I mean, borders are already obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with these what Katie the Russian is doing, and with the flag theory thing. She's not the only one doing it, by the way, but it's a great thing. You just buy yourself another passport, and you can choose to live wherever you want, and you can become a true digital nomad quite easily. Mm-hmm. And if you just do the math around, like, that might cost you $180,000 or whatever, or $120,000, depending on what country you want your passport in. But that's like, that investment is so much better than buying a crappy apartment somewhere. Mm-hmm. in the long run. Yeah, so I believe there will be a great migration from like settling down somewhere and into people becoming truly self-sovereign. And this is all in the sovereign individual, by the way.
And this sounds all very positive, and I think that will be the outcome. I agree, but the process will be chaotic. There will be
There are good reasons to think that it'll be violent and chaotic, especially with all the rest.
It's going to be violent, but you know, if I think about a family living in Venezuela, for example, or whatever, wherever, and then the national currency and all the currency in the world is starting like really to inflate against, like to hyperinflate against Bitcoin. Then what am I going to do? I'm going to take all my fiat money that I have and try to exchange it as fast as possible to Bitcoin. And like, I can't really imagine how fast this process will be, because it's also going to be exponential. Like, the hyperinflation will be exponential. At one point, there will be a big chaos everywhere in the world. People will just go and try to sell their last fiat currencies, but they have no value anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, the exchanges will burn hot. And like...
But this is the thing. Venezuela is a good example, because we're all living in Venezuela, in a sense, because we're all hyperinflating. We're just doing it at different rates.
Exactly, just slower.
So so but the it will become faster and faster over time. It happens to all fiat currencies. There's no way of stopping that, because the only way to keep the system going is to increase the money supply more and more each year. And after a while, it turns exponential, and then the currency dies. And there's no other fiat currencies end up like that all the time. There's mm-hmm. there's no other way, because mm-hmm. the machine stops if you don't do it that way. But sound money is like the opposite of that. So like, if you denominate everything in Bitcoin, where like the I look at it this way: the cheaper the money is to produce, the higher the prices of everything else denominated in that currency, and vice versa. So that the more expensive the money is to produce, the cheaper the prices of everything else denominated in that money. And over time, Bitcoins will become infinitely expensive to produce. The year 2140. There is a price for forging a Bitcoin, but it's so incredibly high that no one can afford it, because mm-hmm. you would need to bribe everyone on Earth, literally, in order mm-hmm. to change the protocol. You know what I mean? I mm-hmm. like, there is still, at this point in time, there is a scenario where every miner could be bribed with a vast amount of money, and you could potentially destroy Bitcoin that way. I think we're past that point already, where you can actually destroy it. But the year 2140, it will be so damn expensive, so that it's approaching infinitely expensive. Because I think already now some of the people in Bitcoin will die on this hill, and they can't be bribed. They're untouchable. So you can't buy them for any amount of money, and that means that Bitcoin survives. And that if Bitcoin survives, it wins. All it needs to do to win is to survive.
Mm-hmm. Because of the mechanic that it's kind of sucking in all the value in the world.
Because what people don't realize is that you can't be for or against Bitcoin. Everyone who's like for Bitcoin knows this 21 million limit. They know the halvings. They're aware of like the basic principles of Bitcoin, that like the chain with the most work is the one we build on, blah blah blah, the basic technical stuff, this is what Bitcoin is. People knowing this stuff, like knowing is owning, is not only true for a specific amount of Bitcoin and a private key, but it's also true for the entire network. That is what the network is. It's people agreeing on a fixed set of rules and agreeing that those rules won't change. Mm-hmm. And people try to change the rules, like Roger Ver and people who fork off, and they fail miserably, because the whole point of the invention is to follow the rules. And the whole point of the invention is like absolute finite amount of something, absolute scarcity, whatever you may call it. Some people don't like the term scarcity. They think there's a difference between something being finite and something being scarce. And yeah. I think maybe I have
maybe absolute.
Yeah. Maybe I there's a linguistic thing there, but mm-hmm. you get what I mean. Like everyone in Bitcoin knows that is what Bitcoin is: resistance to replicability. Trying to duplicate that is a fool's errand, because there's no point to it. So you can't argue against Bitcoin, because there's nothing to argue against. It's just a bunch of people agreeing on something. How do you argue with that?
Yeah, there are more and more and more of them. That's the interesting part. There is an almost negligible small amount of people, a small number of people that come into Bitcoin, understand it, and then go away again. Like almost everybody who ever understood it stayed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, did you have this experience as well? I have the experience. Everyone who actually understood Bitcoin is a fan of Bitcoin and will always.
Yeah, but it's not that binary. I think no one understands Bitcoin perfectly.
Of course.
But there's like a threshold that if you're above that threshold, mm-hmm. then there's no way back. You've fallen mm-hmm. into the rabbit hole and there's no way out. Mm-hmm. People that have done that are becoming more and more people do that every day. And there's such like the amount of Bitcoiners out there that I talk to every day these days is so. There's so many of us now, and I think we're reaching critical mass, or whatever you can may call it, because
it's growing.
Yes, definitely. Of course. I mean, at work the other day, people were talking about this and this. They were talking about the stock market, and this stock is so good because it went up 20% and stuff like that. And I couldn't help myself. I started laughing. What do you mean 20%? like I made 10,000% in 5 years. What the fuck are you talking about? It's too slow. Don't you realize what's happening here? How can you be so blind to this? And it's mainstream mm-hmm. media pushing all this. Oh, Bitcoin has dropped 80%, and they missed the big picture. In 5 years, Bitcoin has gone up by 10,000%. How do you beat mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. Nothing on earth can beat that. And as we spoke about before, it won't stop. It will actually get weirder and weirder and weirder.
Forever, Laura. Forever.
Forever, Laura. fucking forever. Pardon my French.
That's mind-boggling. That's mind-boggling. I mean, I wish...
It truly is. Yeah.
I do understand the concept of it, and I really wish it's going to happen, but it kind of still feels surreal.
Yeah, it does to me too.
That, like, why should we be the first percent of the people to understand?
Yeah, and I question myself all the time about this mm-hmm. because I know that the firmer a stance I take on this, and the more I fight for that, the more I promote this idea of everything becoming weird very soon, the more books I sell and the better my chances at becoming some sort of Bitcoin guru if it works. So I know I'm not immune to incentives either. No one is. We all have our incentives. And I just want, like, I want to live a more stress-free life, and I can't just do that right now. But this thing is too exciting and too big, so I can't really drop it. I can't really drop these thoughts. They're in my head all the time. And I can wake up in the middle of night and start thinking about something about Bitcoin. When I wrote the Everything Divided by 21 Million article, I was sort of in a semi-sleepy state. I wasn't really awake. I was just like...
I read this tweet. I was only half awake when I wrote this.
It was so weird. It came from the subconscious somewhere. So, but anyway, I don't even know what it means. But the more I think about it, the more convinced I get that this thing is... It's all real, and the math works. It can't really play out any other way.
And we can't all be wrong. I mean, there's so many smart people kind of and so we can't all be wrong.
But think now about...
I haven't heard, like, good counter-arguments still.
Think about it this way. If we're all wrong, Bitcoin dies overnight. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Peter Schiff was right. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin is a bubble, it died. We will still know each other. I know you in Switzerland, and I know this other guy I talked to yesterday, and I know the other guys. I still know all these great people that I met last year. They're still there. I still have them on Twitter and Telegram and whatever.
Yeah.
So we can still build things together. We can still have our little network. We can still be friendly to each other and exchange stuff, even without Bitcoin. And we're like-minded people, and we already ate this red pill or orange pill. So we already know that the value of scarcity and the value of sound money. So we'll use something else. It won't be as good as Bitcoin, and there will be a lot of arguments and everything. But it's, the world is still a better place than before Bitcoin existed, even if it dies.
Wow.
This is the most... Yeah, this is optimism. Curing the world.
And it's the perfect sentence to stop this podcast. Thank you very, very much. I'm sorry. I could talk to you for ages about this, but
yeah, it's a good place to stop. I think
it's an amazing place to stop, and it was an amazing conversation. Thank you very much, Knut.
Thank you. I hope I didn't ramble on too much.
it was perfect. I mean, in the end, the listeners will tell us, but for me it was a very, very nice and insightful and inspiring conversation. Thank you very much for doing this, Knut, and I wish you the best of luck in Spain with your new life and with all your activities. Go on, don't leave us, don't leave Bitcoin.
Thank you. I think this is the part where you're supposed to ask me where people can find me on the internet, right?
Sure, please tell them.
I'm at Knut Svanholm on Twitter and I have a Telegram channel these days instead of a newsletter, because newsletters are slightly gay.
Cool.
Yeah, that's basically it. Where you find my stuff, and my books are on Amazon. What? Sorry.
Telegram channel? Like, what's the Telegram channel?
The handle is it's called the Knut Svanholm Bitcoin channel.
Cool.
I'm at Knut Svanholm and at Telegram as well, or on Telegram. So yes, and I have a Patreon set up now. Here starting my new life and everything. So
perfect.
If you appreciate what I do, everything is I'm up for grabs now for Bitcoin gigs.
Awesome. I will keep that in mind, and I'm sure there will be many listeners reaching out to you. It was great speaking to you, Knut, and I wish you all the best. I hope we can see each other soon, maybe even live at the conference at some point.
Yeah, or maybe I'll stop by Switzerland on my way down. Absolutely. If I get the chance.
Yeah, please do it. Let me know. You can come and have an actual beer in our office. in Zurich. That would be amazing.
That sounds cool. Excellent.
See you later.
Yeah. See you. Thank you.
Cheers, man. Have a good
one. Bye. Cheers.
Bye.